Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, we begin our second quarter century. Happy anniversary to us. Later this morning, we begin a series called 25 Years in 25 Days, Then and Now. Today, the year this show went on the air, 1989. We'll talk about the fall of communism then and now, and the start of The Simpsons then and how it looks now, starting later this hour. Also today, while many places in the U.S. are trying to avoid the unaccompanied minors coming from Central America, New York City is working on new ways to welcome them and help them avoid deportation. We'll talk to City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito about her latest plan. And Daisy Hernandez today on the new book she edited called Colonize This. But we begin with the troubling outbreak of a virus infecting mostly kids around the United States that's been making national news. And now the enterovirus, as it's called, has begun to show up in our area for the first time. So we will help you figure out what you need to know to protect yourself and your children. Another new development today, doctors in Denver say they may now be seeing neurological symptoms, including possible paralysis, not just upper respiratory ones, in some enterovirus patients. So let's see what we need to know. With us is Dr. Jay Varma, Deputy Commissioner for Disease Control for the New York City Department of Health. Dr. Varma, welcome back to WNYC.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
And listeners, any questions about enterovirus, 212-433. WNYC. Do you want to start by just laying out what enterovirus 68 is and where it's being detected?
Enterovirus is as the name suggests, a virus that can be transmitted like other respiratory viruses when people cough, sneeze, or if you touch an object on which the virus has landed. So this is a virus that we know causes illness in children and sometimes in adults, all over the United States and all over the world. There are many different types of enterovirus, probably over 100 different types of it. This most recent strain, enterovirus 68, is not one that we normally see, but in the middle of the summertime, some hospitals in the Midwest noticed a dramatic increase in children being hospitalized. And through some special testing, they were able to figure out that it was this specific virus that was the cause of young children's illnesses.
Most of the cases reported in the South and Midwest, as you say, I know Kansas City and Denver have had particularly large outbreaks. How much has it also arrived here, and how much more do you expect?
We know that this virus has now pretty much circulated throughout the United States. This isn't a virus that we normally test for, so it's possible that there have been cases here for several months without anybody really noticing it. When these big clusters were detected in the Midwest, you know, we in New York City and with our partners in New York State began collecting specimens from some hospitals to detect this. And in fact, we have detected it here in New York. We're not counting cases. We're not reporting every single individual case. And the reason is, just like the other most common virus that we see this time of year, the flu, there are really going to end up being too many cases to count. Most people who get sick won't get sick enough to even go to a doctor. And even if they get sick enough, the doctor may not need to test them because their symptoms are just like the common cold. So the point that people need to understand is that this is the season of respiratory viruses. Enterovirus is one of many causes of why people can get sick. And really, there is one virus, however, that we can prevent people from getting sick from and that we know causes deaths among children and among adults, and that's the flu. So we're really urging people, one of the most important things they can protect themselves against any illness this winter is to get the flu shot. It doesn't protect you against enterovirus, but it protects you against a very serious common cause of illness.
And I know that it is not too early, even though it's going to be 80 degrees today and it's still September, to get the flu shot for this coming winter. It would be effective throughout the winter, right? Whether people get it now or whether people get it at the end of October or in November, say?
Yeah, it does feel like summer out there today, but in fact, it is flu season. And ever since early August, doctor's offices and pharmacies have all been fully stocked with the flu vaccine. So absolutely, anybody who is 6 months of age and older should get the flu vaccine. If you're a child between the ages of 2 and 8, the CDC now recommends to get the nasal spray over the shot. which is good news for children, of course, because it means they don't have to worry about getting a poke in the arm. But that flu spray can also be used in adults as well. And it's just critically important for people to get that because, as we know, the flu causes tens of thousands of people to get sick in New York City every winter and causes thousands of deaths throughout the United States. We know the flu shot is safe and effective. And again, it's not going to prevent you again from getting enterovirus, but it will prevent you from getting one of the most serious respiratory viruses this time of year.
We're talking with Dr. Jay Varma, Deputy Commissioner for Disease Control for the New York City Department of Health, mostly about the enterovirus outbreak that's been making national news and is starting to show up in our area. 212-433-WNYC if you have a question, 433-9692. And here's Josh in South Plainfield. Hi, Josh, you're on WNYC.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, my daughter, I have four kids, and of course, if one kid gets sick, everybody kind of gets it, you know, as it goes through. My young daughter now has a cold, which I am hoping is strep, but she has 103 fever. She's going to the doctor today. What separates the virus that we're talking about from the common cold or the flu or other viruses? What do I have to look for that puts a red flag up?
Yeah, it's a great question. Unfortunately, there isn't anything unique about the way this virus causes illness from other common respiratory viruses. The same symptoms that your children are having are the same ones that could be caused not just by enterovirus, but any of a number of different viruses, runny nose, cough, fever, just generally feeling unwell. What's most important about this virus is that it appears to be causing illness, severe illness, mostly in children who have asthma. So if any of your children already have asthma, an important message for you and for other parents out there is they need to, first of all, make sure that their children are using their medications correctly. And if their symptoms are getting worse, or they're having trouble using their medications, they need to call their doctor. Because we know that although we don't have a specific treatment for this infection, we can make sure that people's other respiratory illnesses, like their asthma, are very well controlled. And so if your asthma is well controlled, you're less likely to get severely ill from this virus or any of the other respiratory viruses that are circulating this time of year.
Josh, good luck with your kids. I hope your daughter feels better real soon and that your other kids don't get it. So when you talk about asthma, I mean, any upper respiratory infection or virus tends to exacerbate the asthma in kids with asthma. Is it that this enterovirus 68 seems to affect them more?
That's what we're thinking right now. We don't know for sure because, again, we don't normally test kids with asthma for every type of infection that's possible. A doctor may not test them for any infection because they're really, unless it's the flu, there may not be any specific treatment just for that infection. So, but the most common thinking right now is that there's something about the illness that this virus causes that makes asthma in particular worse than, say, another type of infection that people are getting. That's why most of the hospitalizations that have been occurring in the United States, across the United States, have really been restricted to young children who already had a diagnosis of asthma.
Here's Nancy in Belmore with an asthma-related question about enterovirus. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Actually, it sounds like you answered the asthmatic-related question, but I have a second question. My daughter was diagnosed with a different enterovirus over the summer, one that was fever and rash related and presented differently than this respiratory one. Does that make her more or less prone to get this one?
We think probably it doesn't make a difference because there are so many different strains of enterovirus, at least 100 different strains, that if you got one strain, it doesn't mean you're necessarily protected against this strain. For example, there's an enterovirus that's also a very common cause of a disease that kids get called hand, foot, and mouth disease, where they get oral ulcers, you know, sores in their mouth, and get a rash on their hands and feet. That's also caused by an enterovirus. As of now, we don't think that will protect you against this respiratory strain of enterovirus. But again, it's still fairly early in our understanding about this current strain that we don't know the absolute answer just yet.
So, Nancy, good luck. I guess there's a socioeconomic element to this virus as well. If we're talking about asthmatic kids being the most at risk from it becoming serious, kids who have respiratory illnesses, who are poor, maybe don't have as good treatment to begin with, and asthma is just more prevalent in poor communities.
We know for sure that asthma is, unfortunately, like a lot of other health conditions, one that is not equally distributed across our society. You know, health disparities are an important cause of even worsening inequality in the United States. Asthma is one example. Heart disease, diabetes are also examples, as is HIV infection. We don't know enough yet about how the illness is presenting in New York right now. We have seen a slight increase, maybe about a 25% increase in the number of visits to emergency departments and school nurse visits among young children. That could just be related to variation in the season of asthma because there are different allergens out there, or it could be related to enterovirus right now. So I think getting a better handle on how severe this illness is will give us a better understanding of what the impact might be over the future and whether or not there is going to ultimately be a need for a vaccine or a treatment for this infection.
Eric in Woodside, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for your show. I really appreciate the information.
Thank you.
I designed a utensil for eating former finger foods, and I tried to do research on the CDC to see what diseases are spread from hand-to-mouth vectors, and I found very little information on the CDC side, just some proper hand-washing techniques. Can you expound on how easily viruses are spread from maybe touching a surface and then transferring it to a child's mouth or through other means? Like, what is the incubation period? How long can viruses survive on a surface in general? Or I know they vary, but if you could address that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, the best way to prevent getting infections, other than a vaccine against a specific disease, like getting the flu shot, the best way to protect yourself against viruses that cause respiratory illness or stomach illness is washing your hands with soap and water, avoiding contact with sick people, and then disinfecting surfaces that are frequently touched. Now, the question that you're asking varies according to the type of viruses. We know that some viruses can live outside the body or survive outside the body on surfaces, and they survive different periods of time depending on the surface, depending on whether it's what we call porous or non-porous, depending on characteristics of the virus itself. So there is no really one answer to your question. The reality is we don't know enough about this virus to say X percentage is transmitted because people are coughing, you know, Y percentage is because people are sneezing, and then another percentage is because people are touching a contaminated object. Those are the types of studies that people are going to be trying to do now, particularly in households. As we heard from our first caller who has, you know, four children at home, one of whom is sick, we know the virus is spread, you know, in the homes. I have three kids myself, and when one kid gets sick, it's really hard to keep all of us healthy. So the most important thing you can do is really to wash your hands with soap and water, avoid contact with, you know, sick people. If they're in your home, there's not a lot of way you can avoid it, but also trying to keep your surfaces clean.
Good luck, and thanks for your call, Eric. I mentioned in the introduction the new development that doctors in Denver say they may have noticed neurological symptoms stemming from the enterovirus infection, weak limbs, possible paralysis even. Do you have any more word on that?
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you mentioned that because this is unfortunately the sort of big news that we had over the weekend about that in Colorado. They've detected a number of children who have developed weakness in their limbs. So far, we have a report about 9 children who are hospitalized. Most of them had, all of them had some type of weakness in their limbs. And when they did a scan called an MRI scan, they noticed some abnormality in their spinal cord. Of those children that were sick, they're all being tested right now for causes of this illness. All of them reported some type of respiratory illness before they had the paralysis, and several of those, at least 4 so far, are actually positive for enterovirus 68, the same enterovirus that we've been talking about. You know, we know that this is possible. We know that enteroviruses cause respiratory illness. They can cause rash. They can cause a stomach illness. And we know that they can cause either meningitis or encephalitis. Meningitis is infection of the lining around the brain. Encephalitis is infection of the brain itself. The reason we know that is that other strains of enterovirus can also cause this type of weakness and paralysis. The most common one that we know about is polio, and that's what we have a vaccine for. Polio is an enterovirus, as we know, the most severe symptom of polio is paralysis. So this is something that we're obviously going to be watching very closely in New York City to see whether or not children who develop this respiratory illness are also developing this very unfortunate complication. But there's not a lot we know about right now about this, and unfortunately, there's not a lot we can do to prevent that from developing until we get a better understanding of how this virus is being spread.
Right. And the sample is small, so I guess the connection is still being established, but that's a scary development in a virus that's spreading around the country to a lot of kids. Janine in Piermont, you're on WNYC. Janine, you think your child may have enterovirus 68?
Yeah, it sounds like she might. She's been ill for about 2 weeks. She's 7. She's been to see her doctor twice. She does not have asthma, but she's been very susceptible to croup and other respiratory illnesses. She's been taking albuterol breathing treatments like 2 or 3 times a day. She's done a course of antibiotics, and she's not getting better. We're going back to the doctor today. So I have 2 questions. The first one is there any benefit to us asking for a test to this to see if she actually does have the enterovirus? And the second one is, how do you know when to panic with the respiratory stuff? It always sounds scary to me. When she's kind of a little wheezy in the nighttime, when do I take her to the ER? Like, when is it time to freak out?
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear about your daughter. As a parent myself, I know how concerning it can be when your child is sick and you don't know what's something that you should worry about and what you shouldn't worry about. I'm lucky to have a wife that's a pediatrician, so I can always ask her for help. But of course, most people don't have that luxury. So I'll give you the advice that that we as public health people and as parents give people, which is first, to answer your first question, there really isn't a value in having the test. Your doctor should evaluate your child to see whether or not this is a new infection. It's school year, so it's possible to have one infection after another infection, so it's certainly possible that there's something new going on. So obviously your doctor will look and evaluate her for that, but there isn't any specific benefit, and we're not recommending that doctors routinely test children for that. To get to your more immediate concern about when to worry, definitely talk with your doctor, because your doctor is going to know your child's illness better than I would, for example, but particularly for any child that already has had wheezing, some type of asthma-related problem in the past. What we worry about is a change in their symptoms from what they have normally to what they have now. So if they are breathing and having more difficulty breathing than they would normally, if you're needing to give them treatment more often than you had in the past, if they look like they're struggling to breathe or they're having periods where they, if they're really a young child, where they turn blue for a moment or look like they're holding a breath, those are all very clear warning signs. If your child ever says that they're feeling tired from breathing or just not acting as they would normally, beyond what you might expect because they're tired, those are all signs of that you should be worried and you should be in touch with your doctor. And this is really a difficult time of year because we know kids are going back to school, viruses are being transmitted. And especially for kids who have asthma, it's an important time to review how you control your asthma with your child and with your doctor.
And with respect to whether it's enterovirus, if her child had a course of antibiotics and it didn't clear up, I guess that would indicate that it's not a bacterial infection. It probably is some kind of virus that her child has, right?
Most likely, you know, one way to conclude as a doctor that a person's illness is not due to a bacteria, of course, is to treat them with an antibiotic that will kill a bacteria but not a virus. But it's not absolute. It's possible that there is another health condition going on. Asthma worsens in people for a whole range of reasons. It can be anything from things floating around in the air due to pollution or due to allergies from pollen. It can be due to dust mites and infections or dirtiness around the house. So there's a whole range of things that can trigger people's asthma. You are correct that in general, if you've been treated with antibiotics and you didn't get better, one possible explanation could be that you have a viral infection.
Janine, good luck.
Thank you.
And thank you for calling. And just stay in touch with your doctor. That's the number one thing. It seems like you're already doing the right thing if she's already been in twice, but if she's not getting better after 2 weeks, definitely take another look. Lynn in Manhattan, I think, has a flu vaccine question, right, Lynn?
Yes, it is.
Hi.
Hi. I'm in my 80s, and I have heard there is a high-dose flu vaccine for older patients. Should I ask for that, or is that just automatically given to you based on your age?
That's an excellent question, and in fact, there is a vaccine available that's formulated specially for seniors. And as you mentioned, it contains a higher dose of the sort of killed influenza virus so that your immune system, which does get a little bit weaker as you get older, can respond better and you're better protected. It's always a good idea to mention it, whether you go to the pharmacy or whether you go to your doctor to ask about the high-dose flu vaccine. Some doctors' offices may not have ordered that vaccine, for example, so it's a good idea for you to ask about it. Ideally, if you see a physician that also sees a lot of other seniors, ideally they will have ordered that stock of vaccine, but it's a good idea to remind them.
Last question to get back to the enterovirus. If the clusters have been mostly in other parts of the country, why does it develop that way? And now we're seeing some cases of this enterovirus 68 hit children in our area. Why would Kansas City or Denver become real centers for the spread of this? And we don't know yet whether our area will become another one.
You know, unfortunately, nobody has ever been able to figure out why certain viruses emerge in one place versus somewhere else. Sometimes we're lucky enough to be able to find the exact point source origin, if it's an unusual or very rare infection. But oftentimes, viruses emerge because they're spread through animals or they're carried naturally in humans. And for some reason, at different times, different groups of people become susceptible, and then a virus spreads throughout a community. It's one of those great mysteries of science that we still don't understand. You know, flu is really probably the biggest mystery that we've had because we know for thousands of years it's caused illness in humans, and it has this seasonal pattern that no one's ever been able to really explain. So it's an excellent question and one that we hope that we will eventually have an answer to. But the sad reality is we may never know that answer for sure.
Dr. Jay Varma, Deputy Commissioner for Disease Control for the New York City Department of Health. Thanks so much. Very informative. I know you helped a lot of people figure out what's going on and what steps to do to prevent their kids from getting the enterovirus and themselves from getting the flu. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Coming up next, while many places in the U.S. are trying to avoid the unaccompanied minors coming from Central America, New York City is working on new ways to welcome them and, in the latest, to help them avoid deportation. We'll talk to City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito about that coming up next.